Fixed income markets have evolved, but most benchmarks haven't. At Janus Henderson, our forward-thinking framework aims to reconstruct past approaches to fixed income by focusing on multiple investor objectives. Learn more at janushenderson.com. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal and fluctuation of value.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, October 14th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Captain James T. Kirk promised to boldly go where no man has gone before. Well, at 90 years old, William Shatner, the actor who played the iconic captain on Star Trek, has finally gone to space for real. He may not be the first person to have gone up there, but he certainly went boldly, flying with Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin to the edge of space yesterday morning. On today's show, what does this moment tell us about the budding space tourism industry? And will high-profile passengers like Shatner help move it forward? Our reporter Micah Maidenberg, who covers the industry, will be here to discuss. That's after these headlines. Apple is studying ways to make AirPods into a health device. According to documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal and people familiar with the plans, the company is working on ways for its wireless earbuds to enhance hearing, read body temperature, and monitor posture. Our tech reporter Rolf Winkler says Apple hopes that expanding the health features on its devices could help it attract new customers.
There's a possibility, if you think about hearing aids, the possibility that Apple could market AirPods as hearing aids, particularly for those with mild and moderate hearing loss, folks who don't today have hearing aids because they're really, really expensive. They run into the thousands of dollars and you have to get them through an audiologist. What if there was a cheaper, totally functional solution that could meet that need? Maybe there's a whole bunch of people out there that might buy AirPods, which, by the way, don't come with the old age stigma that regular hearing aids come with. Maybe a lot of those people might pick up a pair of AirPods to go with their iPhone to address their hearing loss.
It's unclear if Apple is developing specific new hearing aid features for AirPods or if it wants to market existing hearing improvement features as hearing aids. The electric truck company Lordstown Motors named a new chief financial officer. Lordstown's former CFO left in June along with the CEO after a board committee found that parts of the company's disclosures about truck pre-orders were inaccurate. The new CFO, Adam Kroll, has a background in finance and in the automotive industry. And the final day of a ransomware summit hosted by the U.S. gets underway today. The virtual summit includes 30 nations looking to improve cooperation in addressing cybercrime. Notably absent from the list of invited nations is Russia. The U.S. has accused Russia of allowing cybercriminals to operate within its borders. A U.S. official said the two countries are engaged in talks through bilateral channels instead, and that Russia's absence from the summit didn't preclude it from future meetings. Okay, coming up, it wasn't Scotty beaming him up, but William Shatner did get to go to space. We'll discuss what the actor's trip with Blue Origin could signal about the future of space tourism. That's after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Betterment, a full-service 401k provider. Attract and retain talent by helping your employees save for retirement and more. No business is too small to get started. Learn more at betterment.com/401k.
Captain Kirk from Star Trek had lots of harrowing adventures in space. Now William Shatner, the actor who played the iconic captain, has gone into space in real life. Shatner is 90, making him the oldest person to go to space. He was part of a four-person crew that flew there with Blue Origin yesterday, and the trip brought him to tears. Here he is speaking to Blue Origin's founder Jeff Bezos after landing.
What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary.
The trip was Blue Origin's second human spaceflight, and it's got a lot of people wondering when the space tourism industry might take off for real. Joining us to discuss this is our reporter, Micah Maidenberg. Hey, Micah.
Hey, Zoe.
So, Micah, it feels like every couple of weeks we're talking about space tourism flights. Are we at a point where the industry is taking off?
Clearly, the flights over the summer and into the fall have, you know, there's been an uptick of them, more than in the past, in private human space flight. But, you know, space tourism is still very small and relatively untested. And it's likely to remain that way for a while. And, you know, one of the reasons it's likely to remain that way is because of cost. These tickets aren't cheap. And another reason is simply that, you know, right now the companies that are providing these services aren't, you know, launching every day. They're pretty rare. They're building up capacity. They're working with regulators. They're building vehicles. So it's going to take some time to sort of build up that capacity.
So this is Blue Origin's second passenger flight with a full crew. Does that put it ahead of its space tourism competitors?
Well, the competitive set are sort of in different places. SpaceX has sort of bragging rights for sending the first, you know, all private crew to orbit. Blue Origin has now completed its second, human flight, both of which have had paying passengers on board. Virgin Galactic is getting ready for future flights with, you know, paying customers on board, but their, you know, kind of bigger ramp is going to be next year. So the companies are all in kind of slightly different places with their marketing efforts, their sales efforts, their technology, and sort of what they're actually offering to buyers right now.
It seems like when it comes to Blue Origin that they keep having these well-known figures on their flights. I mean, they had their founder, Jeff Bezos, on the first flight. They had Wally Funk, who wasn't a household name, but, you know, she was a big deal. At the time, she was the oldest person to go up, and she'd trained to be an astronaut. And now they've got William Shatner, or Captain Kirk, traveling mm-hmm. into space with them. Why does Blue Origin want to keep having, you know, well-known figures on their flight? Does it give them an edge?
Having William Shatner on board definitely attracted a lot of attention to this flight. And that's part of what, you know, Blue Origin is sort of doing right now. And the others as well. They're conducting these high profile missions with people that are often, you know, well known to wider audiences, and using that as a calling card, so to speak, to get their names, their technology, what they're doing out there to sort of a broader public.
So Mr. Shatner didn't have to pay for his trip. He was an invited guest, but there were two paying passengers. Do we know anything about those customers?
Yeah. So one of them is named Glenn DeVries. He co-founded a company that basically runs a clinical research platform, and he has been interested in space and aviation for, you know, basically all his life, and sort of jumped at the opportunity to go up to the edge of space with Blue Origin. And the other paying customer is named Chris Bashusen. He is from Australia and once worked for NASA. He helped found this company that uses satellites to collect data about Earth and analyze it and sell it. He said he wanted to go because he's been like working on human spaceflight for all of his career and wanted to make it a reality for himself too.
So we don't know exactly how much they paid to go on the flight, but they are paying customers, and going on these early flights, it sort of makes them celebrities in their own right. Do you think as more and more people go, we'll stop caring who these extra paying customers are?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, going to space or the edge of space is, from a private consumer, you know, perspective, is still a very new thing. I mean, that will sort of be the test for all the companies that are working on space tourism is, one day, is to sort of make this kind of commonplace, almost just something that everybody can do.
So we know we're a while away from that being a reality, but do we know how they go from being kind of a novelty to having, you know, a commercial space tourism business?
I think what the companies are betting on in terms of how to get there is just kind of continuing to do what they're doing, build space vehicles and more powerful space vehicles that can take people to further, you know, altitudes into space, develop launching sites. I mean, look, there's airports all over the country. There's not that many places where you can launch people into space. So that's the sort of like challenge, you know, for the industry right now. And, you know, the idea is like, as you add vehicles, add technology, the technology gets better, the infrastructure on the ground here on Earth gets more widespread, that you can lower cost and sort of try to reach, you know, a broader set of people. Now, you know, there's never been a space tourism industry before, so the ultimate level of demand is still a little bit unclear.
like, I feel like we focus a lot on space tourism because they have these well-publicized flights. You know, we know some of the celebrities going up there, but it's definitely not the only business developing in the maybe space economy, we can call it. Can you give us a sense of what other types of businesses are going to make that up and just how big it might become?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Private human spaceflight is a, you know, relatively small part of the broader commercial space world. You know, there's sort of been a wave over the last few years of interest by entrepreneurs and investors in space as a venue for economic activity. You know, we've seen startups develop businesses around providing, for example, fuel to satellites. You know, other companies have launched these smaller, more powerful satellites to capture data. And then there's a lot of firms that are working on rocketry and trying to build sort of businesses around launching equipment and maybe humans into space. Bigger aerospace companies have been investing in different kinds of space vehicles and services. So there's a lot going on in space, and the private human spaceflight certainly does attract a lot of attention, but it's just like one small part of the market. The size of the market is, you know, a lot of analysts expect it to grow. Morgan Stanley, for example, predicted that by 2040, the global space industry could generate, you know, more than $1 trillion that year. And again, that would include everything from private space flights to satellites and more.
So a lot of space for the space economy to grow.
That would appear to be true, yes.
All right. That was our reporter, Micah Maidenberg. Thanks for joining us, Micah.
Thanks, Zoe. Glad to be here.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you're looking for more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like this show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.